The album Shades of Mourning is out now on Sonoluminous, and it is a deeply evocative collection of original works on loss and grief and hope, composed by and recorded by cellist Tamar Sagiv, who's joining me now to share her story. I want to thank you, Tamar, for taking the call. It's really great to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
The sheer vulnerability of this music is really striking to me. It's personal, but it also speaks to broader experiences, human experiences of grief. On that personal level, where did this journey start for you?
It started a few years ago, I believe 3 years ago. I went back home and I was told that my grandmother was rushed to the hospital. And from the airport, I rushed myself to the hospital to see her. That ended up being a few weeks of us sitting next to her while she was passing away. So I was sitting next to her deathbed for a few weeks. And I mean, I think that for everyone who, or anyone who has sat next to a loved one that's, you know, that passed away or sat with them in a hospital, and it's very hard. It's a very hard process. And I kind of started composing Shades of Mourning at that time. At that time, I didn't think of myself as a composer, and I didn't think, you know, I'm going to compose something. It was more of a journaling thing. It was a very hard experience, and I was trying to put it into something more useful for me. And that's how it started.
Did you ever play for your grandmother?
Yeah, actually, so the theme that opens the piece, Shades of Mourning, I actually managed to play for her the beginning of it. It was, I think, her last day. I don't know how much she was aware or how much she knew. It was hard to tell, but it was important for me that, you know, she will know that she will be remembered in this way, that she will be remembered with music.
That theme, was that an improvisation just out of the moment?
Yeah, at the beginning it started as an improvisation, and at the time I was kind of also just posting whatever I was doing on social media, and people really loved it, and like they really connected to it, and I think that's kind of what drove me to write it further than just like the beginning improvisation of it. And to develop it into a piece. In her funeral, I did play half of it, because half of it at that time was written.
How would you describe the sonic landscape of the album, or maybe put another way, what are some of the different shades that we encounter?
So for me, it started with my grandmother. That's when I started really thinking about grief. I didn't think of it as an album then, or I didn't think of it even as a piece. And then, you know, I was dealing with the loss of her, and it made me think about, you know, what we're left as human beings from our ancestors, you know, like what they're leaving us in, like smells and, you know, colors, or like whatever it is that we have from them. That's when I composed Roots, because I wanted to kind of think about, you know, what does it mean to belong to someone, or someone that you love that, you know, brings something to you. Sometimes you don't even know them. And from there, I was experiencing in my own personal life, you know, a different kind of losses. I was like, for example, in the piece that maybe you never used to be, it was a time that I was kind of distancing myself from a group of friends that I had. And it made me think about friendships, and are sometimes they're no longer, or they can still be living, or, but it's still a loss, and it's still painful, and it's still mourn it in a way. That's kind of was my process of thinking. And that's when I really thought, oh, maybe I have here something, like maybe I can create this collection of music that speaks about the different kinds of grief that one experiences. I think that also for me personally, in my own grief, I found a lot of, I don't know if to call it shelter, but I found a lot of meaning in music, because music really helped me. And I was thinking of how incredible that is, that we have music, you know, at all, that that's like small thing can help so much. And Imaginary World was part of that, that I was like kind of listening to a lot of music to be in my own world, because it felt better to imagine a world that might be different or better.
What were some of the expressive techniques that you worked into the music to convey those different facets of loss and grief?
Oh, that's a great question. I actually was thinking a lot about tuning. At the time, I just received a new cello. That's the cello that I'm playing on right now. My old cello was a cello that I kind of, it was my first cello, and it's the only cello that I knew. And then I received this beautiful instrument, and it was so different than the other one. And it had so much colors and so many different ways of playing. One of the things that I felt was that it sounded a bit more mellow. And then I started playing around with tuning it a bit lower for the recordings or for certain movements, because it felt to me like I wanted to imitate what I was feeling. And that somehow felt to me that, you know, that tuning it lower felt a bit more human in a way. So that was the first thing that that I was doing. And then the second thing, I was playing a lot with mutes around, specifically with when I had like the string trios. I really loved some instruments muted and some instruments not muted. And I had like, I really loved the different colors that it gave. Also, speaking about tuning, I really loved the idea of not really playing in tune all the time. You know, not only that the cello is lower, because then you have to do everything has to be relative, right? So if the cello is tuned lower, you have to play lower. But I was playing a lot around with pitch, and sometimes pitch that is not so clear and not so clear what it is. I found a lot of meaning in that.
On the flip side of grief, there are some moments where we see a light at the end of the tunnel, moments of hope. And can you describe some of those pieces that like shine a ray of light on a path forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Intermezzo was the first one of them. It was my own personal experience after my grandmother passed away and I was kind of deep into the grief. I went to an art residency upstate New York. You know, like after you sit in a dark room for so long and someone is dying, it's a very, very difficult, very heavy, very dark experience. And it was summer, upstate New York, and, you know, the trees were beautiful and the flowers were blooming. And I felt that like I had such a privilege of getting this intermezzo in a way, like from that experience. And you know, I found like there were other artists there and it really felt like life, like I was seeing life again after so much tragedy. That was the first time that I kind of like that something a bit more optimistic came. And also when I was thinking about the album and the order of the pieces, I put a lot of thought into the order, and it felt to me that intermezzo needed to be there for me and for the listener, you know. The second one I believe is Imaginary World. Yeah, this one was the hard, like, I don't know if it was the hardest to write, but it was difficult to write it a little bit because I wanted to convey that there is a world that could be better. But I also wanted to convey the fact that it was in my head, you know, that in a way that it was still imaginary and not quite there. So I was thinking a lot of how to convey that with the music. A lot of the times I added a lot of like glissandos, like that go down, that helped that. I felt that were helping that feeling of like, oh, it's like, maybe it's in their head or something like that. But yeah, Imaginary World for me was really important because not only because music gave me so much peace, but also I was trying to imagine a world where, you know, when peace can exist and that people can live together and happy and yeah.
I had a chance to read through some of the liner notes, and at the end, there's a long list of acknowledgments. Who are some of the people that helped bring this project to fruition? People who maybe helped shape you personally or professionally?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So first of all, my mother is a musician. I think that she was a single mom and she raised my brother and I alone. And like all through my childhood, I saw a woman who does things her own way and by herself. And that was like that totally shaped me, like to be able to say, oh, if she could have done that, I can do that too. So also she made me play the cello, so I think I owe a lot to her. But so my mom, my family, I think that a lot of it is to my teachers all the years. I mean, my first teacher made me fall in love with the cello, which is a not easy task for a teacher to do. I know, you might know. After that, each teacher gave me kind of something different to think about and some other perspective on the cello and on my technique, on myself and like myself as a musician. I think that maybe the biggest impact that I got was from Matt Chaimovitz, who was my teacher for the past, I would say 6 years almost. And he is such a creative person, such an incredible cellist, and such an incredible musician and artist. And he made me think outside the box. I think that I owe a lot to him and to the way that he made me think of things, because you need someone to kind of help you develop that artistry. And then after that, I think that it was just a lot of really, really good people that heard the album and, you know, and said, well, this is really beautiful, and they wanted to help make it and bring it to life. And a lot of them were my professors, like Simone Dinelstein, who heard it and then you know, sent it to other people and the label. And I've been working with my manager for the past year or even more, Michael Winger, and he's always like thinking big and, you know, believing in it. Even at times, you know, as creative people, we don't always believe in ourselves, and like we have sometimes that, you know, we are in doubt or we don't feel so great. And it's really important to have someone who kind of helps in that way.
Am I correct in understanding this is your debut with the label Sonoluminous?
Yes, it is.
So, really special moment. Congratulations on your debut, and thank you for taking a couple minutes with me to give a little bit of background and context. And as far as the imaginary world goes, I say we keep on imagining and just get that much closer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just actually, the album release concert is happening on September 25th at National Sawdust, and I was writing kind of the show and thinking of what I'm going to say. And one thing that is really important for me to say is that, you know, as artists, we have the ability to imagine because we are so creative. Sometimes we can imagine things that people don't think about yet, or like cannot imagine, or cannot possibly think that can happen. You know, sometimes we don't have superpowers and we cannot like create world peace, but we can imagine it. I think that's a very big task, and that's really important to do, because maybe one day, if we imagine it enough, it will happen.